We'd like to welcome everyone being here on our wonderful Shabbat evening. It's how amazing God is. He's so good to us that he gives us these wonderful times to gather together. And this particular Torah portion is going to be talking about how we're supposed to have set apart gatherings. And they're not to be forgotten, ever. They're set apart for a reason. And once they're set apart to Yehovah, they don't somehow later on in life become where they're not set apart. It's always set apart to him. And so we're going to be looking at this Torah portion. And this Torah portion is Torah portion number 45. It's Vayetkanan. And it's Hebrew for I pleaded or I sought favor. And it's speaking of Moshe seeking favor from Yehovah about him entering in the land. And we'll quickly find out how Yehovah answers him. Because this is not the first time he was making sort of this request, but it's the last time he makes it. And so he had already spoke to him that he wasn't going to enter in. He already knew that, but he's seeking favor again. And there's a reason. It's not because Yehovah don't think that Moshe is sorry for what happened. And he knows that he is. But the reason he has to end where he ends is because we have to have Yehoshua come on the scene, which is a type of Yeshua who will come and literally the living Torah then takes precedent and shows us how to live it out perfectly in our life like he did. So it was not just God saying no to Moshe. There's more to that story. It's not just no. He came to his completion just like the Torah brings us to Yeshua, and then Yeshua takes it from there. The Torah don't end. He just takes it from there. And now it's actually something that's living in. So we ought to be able to follow his righteous right rulings even better than any of the Israelites could have. We ought to be, because we have that much power on our side to get it done. Plus we have an example that was set before us that was did it perfectly. And so all we have to do is follow what he did. Whatever he did, if we do that, then we'll have the same results he had. And so our goal is to have the results he had as being raised from the dead. But people think being raised from the dead is just something that God's just going to give me because. Well, he's not giving Moshe access to enter in because. And so we know that there is a time that he'll say no. But we're going to see in this Torah portion again, the wording is so powerful when we look at it, how important it is. And so we're going to be reading from Deuteronomy, Devarim, chapter 3, verse 23, through chapter 7, verse 11. And half towards Isaiah 40, verse 1 through 26. And so we'll get started in this. We got a lot to cover, a lot to go over, and so we want to give ourselves the proper time necessary to kind of get through this, because this is dealing with our relationship, the relationship process. How does that look? What does it look like? How does it work? To have a relationship with God, what does he expect from us? What am I going to have to bring to the table? Because remember, a relationship is between two parties, each bringing something to the table. Not one bringing something and the other brings nothing, each bringing something. And so if we know what Yehovah brings, you have to ask yourself, what do you bring to form this relationship? What am I bringing to this table to have this wonderful relationship? And how to love Yehovah. This is what this Torah portion is going to teach us. How to love him. And so we're going to listen to the Torah. So we're going to see that the Shema is being expressed in this Torah portion when we get to chapter 6. But it's also expressed in chapter 4. When we start chapter 4, he's expressing the Shema too. And so we see is an early expression of the Shema and then a full explanation in 6. It's fully expressed in 6. And so we'll look at that. He kind of warms us up to what it means to listen to him. And then he gives us the full definition in chapter 6. And so we'll be looking at that. So if you have your Bibles, go to Deuteronomy chapter 3. And we'll just take it from there. We'll take one verse at a time. We'll go through this best we can. I'll share with you what comes to my heart by set apart spirit. And I can tell you there's a lot of, I don't even know how many slides, I didn't even look how many there are, but there's quite a few in there. I'm sure there's somewhere close to maybe 500 or 600. And I quit doing it because I just referenced you to other things to look at that I've sent you before. But I'll spend some more time, I'm sure, tonight to add a little bit more to it. So verse 23 of Devarim, chapter 3. And I pleaded with Jehovah at that time, saying, that's Ve'ekhanan. Ve'ekhanan, and I pleaded. Ve'ekhanan, and I pleaded with Jehovah at that time, saying, O Master Jehovah, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your strong hand. For who is a mighty one in the heavens or on earth who does according to your works and according to your might? Now let me tell you, some might think that Moshe is warming up to Jehovah, or just giving, he's expressing all these wonderful attributes about Jehovah. It's like a child who wants something from daddy, and they go to dad and say, Dad, I just want you to know you're the best dad in the world. Can I have $100? That's exactly what's happening here. Moshe is expressing how wonderful God is as he's pleading with him or seeking favor with him. And then we're going to see that Jehovah answered him pretty sternly. I pray, let me pass over and see the good land beyond the Jordan, this good hill country and Lebanon. But Jehovah was enraged with me. He used a very intense word here, enraged with me, for your sake. Now he's speaking to the people. Remember, this is Moshe speaking to the people. His audience is the people. He was enraged with me for your sake. Now he's telling them what he did. But he was enraged with me for your sake. And would not listen to me. And Jehovah said to me, enough of that. Speak no more to me about this matter. I mean, he just stopped it right there. Go up to the top of Pisgah. Now, Pisgah simply means cleft. So he says, go up on the top of Pisgah. And when he gives this term Pisgah, this is a strong reminder to Moshe about when he put him in the cleft of the rock. Strong reminder. I mean, when he says go to the top of Pisgah, his mind gets flooded back with that encounter when he said, Jehovah, show me your what? Glory or your esteem. Show me your esteem. And he says, well, I'm going to have my esteem pass by you, and I'll put you on the cleft of the rock. This is what Pisgah means. It means cleft. And so he, all of a sudden he has these thoughts start flooding his mind. He's flooded with that encounter that he got to see. And it starts to ease him. There's this ease. And so in essence, what Moshe's made to know at that time was, you're not going yet. But when the resurrection comes, you'll be there. So it settles him. You're going to have to go die. You're not going yet. Go up to Pisgah. So he's giving him this information. And lift up your eyes westward. Why westward? I want you, westward was where they came from. Look back and look at all the journeys you had where you come from. I want you to remember where, how much I took you from all of that stuff. I want you to look westward. and northward. Now, northward would be a representative of the northern tribes that would hold on as long as possible, giving some hope to Israel that they would stay steadfast. Look northward and look southward and look eastward. And so each one of these, I put them in your slides. You can go look at them. They have a little write-up of each one. And look with your eyes. He says, look with your eyes, for you do not pass over this Jordan. You're going to see it, but you're not going to pass over and go in. But command Yehoshua and strengthen him. Now this is very important. He says, command Yehoshua. This is what I was telling you about. This is what we see. This is a type of the Torah brings you to it, trains you all the way unto Messiah. This is exactly what's being spoken of in Galatians here. It trains you unto, not until. And so we have translators that just kind of throw words out there, and they'll use the word until. Meaning one comes until the other comes, and the other one's over when it's, because it's until. But it doesn't say that. It says unto. It's, if you follow the Torah, it can only bring you to one person. It don't bring you to 10 people. It don't bring you to 5. It don't bring you to 2. It don't bring you to 2 ways. It brings you to one way. And Yeshua said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. That's what the Torah brings you unto Messiah. Amen. It makes the connection. And once you connect with Yeshua, he takes the whole thing in like this. Torah and all, you in the Torah, and he kicks you all the way into the promised land. Just like Yehoshua said. How do we know that? Because what did he tell Yehoshua in Joshua chapter 1, verse 8? He tells them something there that I think is important for us to get a hold to and learn and understand. So let's look at it real quick. Verse 8 says, Yehoshua, book of Joshua, chapter 1, verse 8. Do not let this book of the Torah depart from your mouth. Do not let this book of the Torah depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night. Let me see that. So that you guard to do according to all that is written in it, for then you shall make your way prosperous and act wisely. So, do we see that did he say to Joshua, forget everything you learned once Moshe dies, because people make this statement. You can go online. These are the statements made. Moshe died, therefore the Torah died, and then Yehoshua represents Yeshua, and then he went on from there. But did anybody read 1:8? That's my question. Because if you read 1:8, he said, do not let this Torah depart from your mouth. Meditate on it day and night. And so we see the words of this Joshua 1:8 shows us that what Yeshua done, when the Torah brings us to Yeshua, which that's the only place it'll ever bring you, it won't bring you nowhere else. It'll never bring you to a false deity. It'll never bring you to 3 deities. It'll always bring you to Yeshua. Always. That's what the Torah has been designed to do. How do we know that? Yeshua said it himself. He said, if you would understand what Moshe wrote, you'd understand what I'm telling you, because he wrote about me. It was always taking you to me. And when you saw me, you'd embrace me immediately because you read the Torah correctly. But by then, it had added traditions of men, oral laws, and dogmas that had caused a confusion in their life. And they were the best of the best at that time. Can you imagine what kind of traditions and oral additions was added after that? After the Roman empire took over and basically adopted Christianity as their faith. You think anything was added or taken away in that period of time? Lots of things were. And so they were sold as a bill of goods to everybody who came along after that, generation after generation. Well, how do you stop that craziness? Somebody's got to hear from God. That's how you stop it. Somebody got to hear from God, not be afraid to stand up and go back to the text and say, you know what? We missed it. We have to repent. We have to get on our face before Yehovah, and we have to go back and make sure we do what he said to do. And readjust this thing, because we've been sailing in the wrong direction for a long time. Somebody had to do that. And I'm thankful that God dealt with my heart to do it. And I'll never, ever be sorry that I did it. And I'm sure there are thousands of people all over the world that's done the same thing, because I'm not the only guy. And these are guys that happened to them independent of each other. This was not some sect that got started and you joined the sect. This was independent, God moving by set apart spirit who reached his hand out and said, hey boy, let me tell you what you have to do. When you look into my glory, you'll be instantly changed. You'll preach like a man from another world. Your eyes will shoot fire. Your revelation levels will increase. This is what the Lord said to me, and I just took it to heart that he meant what he said. And once I looked at what he said, I said, there ain't no way that what we've been doing can be correct, because when you look at God's glory, his glory is underived. There's nobody like him. When you start reading about everything, because once you, if you look at God's glory, you got to look at God's character. If you're going to look at his character, you got to look at everything he said. So if you look at what he said, you got to go to Genesis. And you got to read Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, and Deuteronomy. You got to read all of that stuff. Then you got to see what he said to Joshua. Then you got to see what he said to the judges. Then you got to see how he spoke to the prophets. And 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, the Chronicles. You got to read all this stuff. You got to go back and read it. And you got to reintroduce yourself to this stuff. And you got to be able to put yourself right face to face with it and deal with the realities of the dogmas that you assume they were correct. And to do all of that, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of humbling yourself and dedicating yourself. But let me tell you, this is what we see happening here. There's this transition that's happening. And he says, but command Yehoshua. And strengthen him and make him brave. There's got to be somebody who's willing to take up this mantle and say what needs to be said in this generation. And say it with energy. And say it you want to say it with everything that's in you. And that's what we see happening here. And this what we're going to see Yehoshua do is he led the people in. And he let them in, and they were brave. For he shall pass over before this people and cause them to inherit the land which you see. And he dwelt in the valley opposite Beit Peor. Now chapter 4. I finished chapter 3. Whew, I'm on a roll. And there's a lot more to say in chapter 3, but I'll leave that up to you. I'll put the stuff there in your notes. Verse 1 of chapter 4. And now, O Israel, listen to the laws and the right rulings which I am teaching you to do, so that you live and shall go in and possess the land which Jehovah Elohim of your fathers has given you. Notice what he used the term, listen. Listen. Now, every time you see this word listen, when we think of listen, we think the only thing I ought to do is tune my ear in. Now, in this particular statement here, he is talking about more the ear, but every time the Shema is used, there's an action that's attached to it that you have to listen and obey. We're not just listening, people. We're obeying people, because you can be a hearer of the word only and not a doer of the word, as Jacob says in James. And you're not going to build any faith. You're not going to please God or anything, because you hear the word. And the Bible talks, and Yeshua teaches a parable. He said, the sower went out to sow the seed. And he starts to sow this seed, and he explains that the sower is God, and the seed is the word. And he sows the seed, and some falls by the wayside, and some falls amongst the stony places. And he said, the ones on the stony place, they receive it with joy. They hear it, but they forget about it. Then the cares of the world and everything sidetracks them, and they're so distracted, they don't take care of it, and it dries up, and there's no root system to it. But he says, some, it falls on good ground, and it brings forth some 30, some 60, and some 100-fold. There are different levels of how the seed is brought forth. And it's going to bring forth in your life some 30, some. It's better to have 30 than none. It's better to have 60 than none. But if you can get 100% return on your money, how many likes that? If I gave you an eye, if you can get 100% return or 30%, which one would you choose? See, when we change what it is we're getting, then we're more prone to pick the higher number because we want 100% return on our money. But do you want 100% on the time you put in, you invest in the Word of God? You want 100%? Well, to get that, you're going to have to let the distractions leave you. Now, it's going to be a battle. It's a constant battle because when I want to do what I want, I want to do right, evil's present. And when I'm doing what I want to do right, I don't do what I'm supposed to be doing because of that evil inclination. So it's a constant battle. So your fight is not with other people. Even though you want to think that if they would just be nicer to me, I'd be a better person. Your fight's with you. The enemy is the one, the enemy that's in me. He's in me. And I need to deal with that evil inclination because in order for me to press in and get 100%, you're going to have less and less of the desires of the flesh that take precedent in your life. And let me tell you, it takes a long time for that to happen because we have to, it's like you have to go through the example. It's the example of it. And then this week might be this you're dealing with, next week is something else, and next week is something else. There's always something. And the more we press in and continue, don't stop, just because you got a fight on your hand, you don't stop. The scripture says we fight the good fight of faith. It means it's going to be a fight, and you endure. You endure to the end, meaning there's going to be opposition. If there's no, you don't have to endure something that where there's no opposition. You just got to stand there. But when there's opposition, you have to endure it because it's trying to knock you off your walk. You have to endure. The more you press in to do the enduring, that 30 goes to 60 and that 60 goes to 100. I hope I explained that good enough. That's how you get to the 100. He's always looking because he knows the heart. We're going to deal with that in a little bit. We're going to show you that he expects us to have a heart for him. And heart in scripture is not emotions. We made it emotions, how we define the heart. I love you with my whole heart. That's emotions. Scripture don't speak that away. So we love God the same way with an emotional love. And that's not the love he's asking for. He's not asking for that kind of love. He don't need your emotions. He wants your whole heart. And so we make definitions, and you can even go on your word search, and you'll see that at the bottom, it's the seat of emotion. That's been added on much later. It's like the sixth or seventh definition. It could have been left off, according to Hebrew thought. Because it's not dealing with that. We're gonna look at that in just a little bit. We're going to get to it fairly quick here. We're dealing with the heart. So he says, do not add to the word which I command you. Now this word is devar. You'll see it often throughout chapter 4. Don't add to the word. Now, many times in other translations, they'll translate the word devar to other words. They'll use command. And it's a little offsetting because we're talking about devarim. And so devar, because we're talking about where, because it's directly connected, devarim and devar is the root. You leave the root word in the scripture. You don't change the definition, but when you translate it, If we go to King James right now, it's going to take that word and make command. And so that is just a little offsetting. So I want you to take some time to look at how many times he looks at this word. Do not add to the word. He's talking about this, what he has delivered to us already. The word that he gave, don't add to the word which I command you, and do not take away from it. Do not take away from it. So we have to leave it like he said it, and that's the way he said it. We're going to leave it like that. Because if not, then we can take the word and we can embellish the word. And when we embellish the word, it's not exactly what he said, but it's sort of like what he said. And so if somebody takes what you sort of said and they add a little bit to it, then it's sort of what you said. And then if somebody takes it from there, then it's sort of what you said. How many see how far that can go? It can go, it's like the phone game, you know. If I tell you something, and you tell Nikki, and then she goes, Brother Eddie, and by the time we get over here to Sister Hillary, we don't know what it's going to be. More than likely, it never turns out to be exactly. When we was kids, we used to play that. And you laughing and giggling when you're kids, you know, by the time it gets over there, it's completely different. Not even close. And so, this is what he's, now listen, for the first time in their life, they're not going to be camped together. They're going to be sent out and spread out. They're going to be in their own cities, in their own towns, and they're going to be at a distance from one another. So they better keep these words, because they're not going to have this one leader like Moshe that they had that brings them to Yeshua. Same thing with the apostles. Yeshua, he said, in a little while, I won't be here no more. And that's when Peter gets all nervous and said, quit talking like that, Master. What are you talking about? He said, I won't be here very long. What are you talking about, you won't be here? But he was talking about he's about to be crucified. And that you're going to be scattered. He tells them this. It's exactly what Moshe is getting them ready for. You're about to be scattered. And when you're scattered, guess what? You're more vulnerable to the attack of the enemy. But within your group, that's why he taught it, within their group, you have to make sure that you maintain these words. Do not add to the word which I command you. Do not take away from it, so as to guard the commands of Yehovah Elohim, which I'm commanding you. Your eyes have seen what Yehovah did at Baal Peor. So he's reminding them of an event that happened. Just had this Torah portion. Your eyes have seen what Yehovah did at Baal Peor, for Yehovah Elohim has destroyed from your midst all the men who follow Baal Peor. Now he tells him, he's telling this story, and he's telling them, Yehovah destroyed them. Now, in their mind, all of a sudden there's a plague, and people started dying. And so they said, man, that sickness hit us in Baal Peor. Well, just in case they still think it was a sickness, Moshe's reminding them who destroyed them. Yehovah destroyed them. He removed from your midst. These were your brothers. These were your uncles. These were your kinfolk. These were people that you were related to. He removed them from your midst. So don't do what they did. When people want to have Baal Peor mindset, where it's this mixed type worship, where you start to explore these other avenues of something else that's there, God will separate them from you. Now, we've experienced some separation. God don't want Baal Peor. So if you're connected in any kind of way to Baal Peor, what do? You get rid of that. You get rid of it. There should be no sign of Baal Peor worship. And so how far did God go? Not only did he say, he got rid of the people who participated in Baal Peor. Remember when Pekahs came along and that righteous indignation and God and people were dying? 24,000 people's dead when Pekahs then shoved the spear through the man and the woman. And then they go out and they conquer the land of the Baal Peor and they bring back the women who were married. These women's husbands they had just killed. He said, what are you doing with them? Those are the ones that came over here and drug you into that worship, where you bowed to their images, you ate their food, for you just was going to look. That's all they said. We're just going to look. We're not going to participate. We ain't going to even sing their song. We won't even stand. It wasn't long. They was eating the food off of idols, and they were worshiping the idols. And so he's telling them, look, I want you to know, I'm reminding you, your eyes have seen what Yehovah did at Baal Peor, for Yehovah Elohim has destroyed from your midst all the men who follow Baal Peor. But you who are clinging to Yehovah, this is so important. Clinging to Yehovah is so important, so valuable. We have to cling to him. Now, this is very important because we see this term, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, is the same root that we see here in clinging. You join, you have to cling to him means join to him. It's like a man joining himself to his wife. Once you join yourself to Yehovah, there's nobody else. Just like a man joins himself to his wife, there's nobody else. How many understand this is important? When you join yourself to Yehovah, there's nothing else. Why would we even look? If you join yourself to your wife, the man's not looking for another wife. He's joined to his wife. He cleaves to her. And they become, the scripture said, they become what? One flesh. So when you cling to Yehovah, you become one. He's the husband, and you have clinged to him as the bride. Now, because that was the original covenant, that's how it was set up. And he goes on to state this. We're going to read it in a little bit. He goes on to state how this covenant was set up. He said he was your husband. Remember, Baal Peor is Lord of the openings. It's Lord of the wide open. And he said, broad is the way that leads to destruction, but narrow is the way that leads to life. And so you got to be careful, because when you join yourself to Baal Peor, there's options. That's what it's referring to. There's options. You got options. You can do that. He don't mind. There's options. And he's stating, as a matter of fact, there's no options. Don't join yourself to the broad road, because Yeshua speaks the same way, but he puts it down onto one-on-one level, so you understand. He speaks it like this. He said, broad is the way that leads to destruction, and many's on that road. That's the Baal Peor, Lord of the wide open. It's just wide open. But he says, tribulation, or narrow, is the way that leads to life. Straight is the gate, and narrow is the way. He had the same language, yet he broke it down on terms that we could understand it. He made it more understandable for us. Same teaching. Because let me tell you, Yeshua taught Devarim. The similarities are striking. If you're reading Devarim like we are now, and you haven't read, started in Matthew 5 and read through Matthew 5 all the way through to the end, then you haven't completed Devarim. It's striking. You ought to just put it on and listen to Matthew 5 all the way through. Listen to it one time and tell me if you don't hit pause every now and then, because you go, man, the similarities is absolutely incredible, because that's what he was teaching. He was teaching the retelling of the Torah, because he had a very short time to do it. Yet, if we write down everything he said, we only have a small portion, but the portion we have is plenty good enough. So he said a lot of stuff. Why? You know why? Because it's a lot of stuff to say. When you're dealing with God's instructions, his mishpatim and his hukkahs, when you're dealing with those things, is a lot of things that he said in the righteous right rulings of God. There's no way you can say it in some short form. You can't do it. You sure can't say it. Everybody bow your head, no one looking around. If you want to accept Christ, you can accept him. I see that hand. Come on up here. You just accepted him. And then where? That ain't making a disciple. You give somebody a chance to be made a disciple. Now you have to sit them down and teach them. Because they got to learn this stuff. And if you're not starting in Genesis, you're not teaching them. This is important to our life. It's valuable to our life. And he's stating it as facts here. But you who are clinging to Yehovah Elohim are alive today. Those that clung to him are what? Alive today. You're not in the 24,000 dead. You're alive today. That's encouraging. Every one of you. See, I have taught you laws and right rulings. I've taught you laws. Laws is the hukim. And right rulings is the mishpatim. This is what he's stating, this fact here. I've taught you laws and right rulings. I've taught you these things. This is so wonderful. I tell you what. You get excited about it. As Yehovah my Elohim commanded me to do thus in the land which you go to possess. This is how you're going to go into this land. And what he told them when you go to the land, what do? You dispossess, then you possess. You got to dispossess the land. You get rid of all their stuff. You don't leave nothing up. We don't want their Asherah poles. We don't want their altars. We don't want anything standing. You clean it out. That's what he told them to do. Now we see that very early on with Yehoshua Achan. Very early on, he got sidetracked. And that cost him. It cost him every time because you can't get sidetracked. The cursed things are cursed. Just because you get them and you paint them up real pretty, you polish them up, you don't make it holy. It don't become set apart. It's been a curse and it's got to go. And so he states this for us to understand that we grab hold to these principles. I've taught you laws and right rulings as Yehovah my Elohim commanded me to do thus in the land which you're going to possess, and you shall guard. This is what you do with these hukim and the mishpatim. What do you do with them? You shall guard to do them. Because they don't work unless you do them. None of it works unless you do it. One of the things we have to do, if we want something, in order to get what we want, we got to do something about it. That's the nature of it. You know, you're not gonna be better unless you do something about it. So if you want to be a better believer, you got to do something about it. You got to apply yourself to it. If you want 60 instead of 30, do something about it. Don't say, God, I need 60. 30 is not going to do, God. I need 60. He said, okay, 60 is available. And we're standing there. He said, 60 is available. The next day, 60 is available. The next day, 60 is available. God, I need 60. I know, you told me that yesterday. 60 is available. And you telling him for a week, 3 weeks later, he still tells you, 60 is available. God, I need 60. I know you told me 3 weeks ago you need 60. It's available. Do something about it. Do something about it. And so this is what he said. And you shall guard to do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding before the eyes of the people. This is your wisdom and your understanding before the eyes of the... What's their wisdom and understanding? The hukim and the mishpatim. This is what he's referring to. Now, once we set the context, because he says, I gave you laws and right rulings. So we know what we're talking about. And he said, this is your wisdom and your right understanding before the eyes of the people who hear all these hukim, laws... And they shall say, only a wise and understanding people is this great nation. Once they look at these laws that you're talking about, this, they're going to say, only a wise and understanding people is this great nation. That's what the people's going to say. Now, who's the people? Those are going to be those who are outside. Those who are looking in. Those are the strangers and the foreigners that never saw this group of people walking around wearing tzitzit. Keeping feast days that nobody's kept. Resting on Shabbat. Nobody did that. They seeing these people, but now they're doing these things and the people's watching. You can't do this for a week and get frustrated because people make fun of it. You can't do it for a couple years and think you've done something. This is your life. This is your life. This is it. And once we settle on that, then we can focus more of our energy on getting to the 60 rather than thinking we got to do something extra to try to please somebody to help them to like me. They'll come along. If they're meant to come along, they'll come along. But you're not going to change a hukim or a mishpatim to have people come along. Because the moment you change one, you're going to change another. And before you know it, you're changing the whole thing. Because you're trying to get people to come along. So you have to soften up God a little bit so people will like him more. Because right now, he's rough all around the edges. He's bossy, and he's pushing people around. And we don't like that kind of God. I mean, he comes in just because we had Baal Peor worship one day and he kills 24,000 people. I mean, he's a little pushy. He reminded them, you're still here because you clung to him. You're still here. I don't want you to forget what happened. Because the moment you start doing it again, it's going to happen again. How many see how beautiful this is? For what great nation is there which has Elohim so near it? These are the things people will say. What great nation that has Elohim so near it? As Jehovah Elohim is to us. Whenever we call on him, and so when we call on him, he's near. He hears our call. If you're keeping his hukim and his mishpatim and you call upon him, he will hear your prayers. And what great nation is there that has such laws and righteous right ruling like all this Torah which I set before you this day? What nation? Compare nation. Who is out there that has these righteous, these laws and this righteous right rulings like you have? And so instead of them viewing what they had as rules and regulations, he wanted them to see the beauty that this was handwritten to you from God. It was like God's love letter to you. He sat down and he wrote with his own finger, this is his love letter to you and how you're taking it. Nobody wrote it. He wrote it for you. And he wants them to understand this is intimacy at a level that's beyond what your emotions can bring to you. Don't be emotion driven. And that's what the church just went through that spell, was only emotion driven. They were looking for more emotion. They were going from one emotional outburst to another emotional outburst to another emotional outburst. It was emotion driven. But we're talking about intimacy. Intimacy is about this relationship. You understand who it is, that's your partner, and the partner that you understands who you are as one who's given your heart to him. Remember what he says in the Shema? At the end of it, the next verse, it says, and thou shalt love Jehovah with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. If you're going to love him, you got to love him as it's put into this contract that you signed together at the mountain. He's going to remind them in a little bit. We stood there, all of us. We all signed it. You got to love him that way. And love him that way is you don't let outside influence come in and mix and mingle. You don't let Baal Peor come in. You cling to him. I mean, when you see a man who loves his wife, when you see that man, you see his wife. And they're always together. You say, that can't be good. It's the best thing that could ever happen to you. It can't be good because you've read some love book from some nutcase and you thought that is Bible. And you took it as Bible. It can be good. It can be very good. We just need a little separation. You don't need no separation. He said cling. Cling means cling. How many understand how important this is? Valuable. I can't even tell you how valuable this is. It's so valuable. I can tell you, if me and my wife wouldn't have had the relationship that we've had over the years, we wouldn't have made it through this. We wouldn't have made it. It was our relationship that we had over the years. Wherever we went together. Whatever we done things together. That's just the way it was. And so, we spent a lot of time together. How important is that? I can't even express how important that is. You have to spend a lot of time with God to get to know Him. If you don't spend a lot of time in the Torah, you're not going to know the Torah because it's so overwhelming. When you look at it, you're going to be so overwhelmed, you're going to say, there's no way you can get to it. You got to understand the time you get to spend with Him, make it quality time. Learn what you can when you get 5 minutes, when you get 10 minutes, when you get an hour. When you get a whole day on Shabbat, learn everything you can on that Shabbat. Don't get tired and weary at Midrash. We're still learning. It's not a chit-chat session. It's more open, but we're learning. And you got to cling to Him. You got to cling to Him with everything that's in you. You're going to bump yourself up. I'm telling you, keep playing around, you're going to bump yourself up to that 60. And when you hit that 100, there ain't no turning back. Because the moment you start seeing that you're getting paid back, you're getting rewarded, you had 100% increase, you don't move your money where you're getting 100% return. Nobody does that. Nobody. When you're going and you say, I'm getting 100, now I'm only getting 5. You say, I'm taking my money out for I lose everything. That's a natural response. But you think you're taking it out when you're hitting that 100 every time? No way. Same thing with God. You're not. When you hit 100, there's no turning back. I mean, you're wide open and you can't get enough of it. For what nation is there which has Elohim so near to it as Yahweh our Elohim is to us, whenever we call on Him? And what great nation is there that has such laws and right rulings like all this Torah which I set before you this day? Only guard yourself and guard your life diligently, lest you forget the Devarim or the Devar, the word, unless you forget the words your eyes have seen. I'm going to have to. I know if I don't, I'll be mad at myself. Sometimes it seems to be a bit repetitive, but I'm reading this, and as I'm reading that verse, now I didn't write, there's no note here, instantly, set apart spirit, put 1 John 1 in my mind. And I'm going to have to read it. Because he reminded me to read it. Now, I didn't read this ahead of time so I could remind myself. I'm talking about I never even had this down. Just reading that verse makes me want to read 1 John. Why? Because verse 1 says, what was from the beginning... What was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked upon, and our hands have handled according, concerning the word of life. Is this not exactly what I just read? You wonder why the set apart spirit leads us here, because it's exactly what I just read. And the life was manifest, and we have seen and bear witness and announced to you that everlasting life, which was with the Father, was manifest to us. We announce to you that we have seen and heard, so that you too might have fellowship, koinonia, that you too might have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship, our koinonia, is with the Father and with His Son, Yeshua Messiah. Are you seeing how beautiful this is? Now, I'll let you read the rest of one. I think I read enough to just get us excited about it. Only guard yourself and guard your life diligently, lest you forget the words your eyes have seen, lest they turn aside from your heart all the days of your life, And you shall make them known, and you shall make them known to your children and your grandchildren. I mean, see this. You got to get acquainted with it. You got to acquaint yourself with him. When you acquaint yourself with him, it's just something about it. There's something that's, you can't explain it when you acquaint yourself with God. You cling to him, you become one. You gotta cling to him with everything that's in you. The day when you stood before Yehovah Elohim at Horeb. Here we go, he's going to remind us. He's telling us about the day, the wedding day. How many ready to read that? The wedding day. You stood before Yehovah at Horeb, and Yehovah said to me, assemble the people to me and make them hear my words, so that they learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth, to teach them to their children. I want them to teach this to their children. Let me tell you, when you can be a generation, a Torah people of a generation who studied the Torah so long that then you can turn around and teach it to your children, then you're learning. Now you've put in the time. And now you can sit with your children. So we're still behind a little bit, but we're getting there. We're getting there. The day when you stood before Yehovah Elohim and Horeb, and Yehovah said to me, assemble the people to me and make them hear my words, so that they learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth, and teach them to their children. And you came near and you stood at the foot of the mountain, and the mountain burned with fire. To the hearth of the heavens, darkness, clouds, and thick darkness, and Yehovah spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard a voice of words, but saw no form. You only heard a voice. Now there's a reason they saw no form. Because once the people see a form, what do they quickly want to do? They want to start trying to copy what they saw and make something. But he's telling them, you saw no form, you only heard a voice. No excuse to make any idol. You give an excuse for an idol, they'll make idols. Why? Because they were idol makers. That's where they come from. They were idol. They was in the land of the idols. There was an idol for everything. That's why he gave the plagues. They had a frog idol, so he sent the frog plague. They had a Nile idol. They had crocodile idol. They had idols for everything. If it moved, if it crept, if it was existing, they had an idol for it. You say, that's strange. Let me tell you, I've been in countries, they do exactly that. You can't go down the street a block without seeing an idol or a little temple. They make their temples, they're so small, nobody can fit in them. But they make them everywhere. But in front of them, there's all sorts of sacrifices. I mean, you go there, there's food, there's rice. Creatures and dogs just digging through it, and it's just every time it's full of stuff. There's incense, there's wax burned everywhere, and you see it constantly. It's just one, every block or so you see an idol, or you see somebody kneeling by a tree, or somebody kneeling by a tractor, or whatever it is, it doesn't matter. If it creeps, moves, walks, any kind of way, they make an idol. Because they assume it's a god. And the Hindu religion is very heavily steeped in that. So when you never saw anything like that before, I never saw anything like that before, I was kind of shocked by it. So I had questions. I wanted to see what they're doing. Are they worshiping? Worshiping. That's what they're doing. They have festivals, lots of them. And their festivals can go on for days, and they don't eat. They don't eat through the whole festival, and at the end of the festival, they'll have a food truck come along. And the food truck will have a big, big cauldron in the back of it where they cook some rice with a little whatever meat. It might not have no meat. It might be rice and lentils. And they'll cook this big cauldron of it, and the people will parade behind that truck for miles and get their turn, and they'll go there and they'll put the food in their hand, and they ate 3 days. They never slept in 3 days. And by now they're in a kind of array, you know, and it's So it don't take long for people starts knocking people out. And, you know, they're getting this kind of a frenzy. And so you see that and you go, now the God is right on each side of the cauldron. There's gods, two gods of whatever. I mean, you can't tell what kind it is because it's got a head of an elephant, a body of a man, feet like an eagle. I mean, it's just kind of bizarre, you know. But they're running to their God, and they're getting their little, and they're eating it out of their hand like that. And they're, you know, they're in this frenzy. And they get out the way, or get shoved out the way, or get trampled on, and the other group comes in. And we're sitting there watching these festivals. I'm going, wow. And that's what he said, don't do that kind of stuff. I gave you a set of laws and right rulings. You do those, and you act right. That when the nations see, they'll say, nobody's got a God as close like they got. Is that what we're doing? Are we acting that way? Are we conducting ourselves in that way? Or do we still fight the flesh just to show up? And so when somebody looks at a life, they can't tell whether you're in or out. They can't tell if you made your mind up to keep Shabbat or not. They can't tell if you made your mind up to keep feast days or not. Because sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you're in the church, sometimes you're not. Oh, that's not clinging to him. When you cling to him, it's a done deal. Well, let me tell you what I made my mind up a long time ago. When I said, I do to God, I meant that. And I've been clinging to him ever since. And I find myself today, I'm trying to really scoop my shoulder underneath his arm. I really want to get locked in where he's got his arm around me. I want to snuggle deep inside his side. That's what I find myself wanting to do because I want to get closer than I've ever been before. And the way we do that, we have to obey what he said. We have to listen to what he said. He put us in the midst of the fire and he made us know, he made known to you his covenant, which he commanded you to do. The 10 words. He's speaking of those 10, that love letter that he wrote, that 10 words. And he wrote them on two tablets of stone. And Yehovah commanded me at that time to teach you laws and right rulings for you to do them. For you to do them in the land which you're passing over to possess. Now we've been going through this practice period. We've been practicing, and our practicing hasn't been too good. Now, two guys, they practiced real well. Because let me tell you, from the time he sent the 12 spies in and two came back with a good report, Joshua and Caleb, they could have floundered out in the 40 years, but they did not flounder out. You know why? Instead of getting farther away from God because of their evil inclination that they had, just like everybody else, you know what they did? They got closer to him. They dug deep in, and they put their arm around him and because they had 40 years to do it, and they didn't do it. 40 years to flounder out with everybody dying around them. They kept clinging to him. So the proof is there. If you want him, he's available. If you want to hit that 100% return, you can have it. It's available. And that's what these guys tapped into. They tapped into it. And now what we're about to see is that one guy, Yehoshua, that one that came back with a good report, still all these years later, he still got a good report. And he still... Now listen, he's still told in 1:8, guard these commands, meditate in this Torah day and night. He's still told, he's reminded. Just because he did all this right, the moment you let up a little bit and you don't keep reminding, keep rehearsing these things, it's just a little slack's all it takes and it can all go bad. So what we see is God don't let up. Let me tell you, he's God today, and he's going to be God tomorrow, and he'll be God the next day. He's always going to be God. But you can't. He'll never slack up from being God. He don't come with you on. He's not half God one day. He don't slack up. He's full God. He's full God every time he comes to you, and you have to do the same to him. You're committed to him every day. It has to be that way, and that's how we keep from getting slack. And Yehovah commanded me at that time to teach you the laws and right rulings for you to do them in the land which you pass over to possess. Therefore, diligently guard yourself, for you saw no form when Yehovah spoke to you at Horeb out of the midst of the fire. So he's reminding them, guard yourself, because you saw no form. So that thought you got in your mind, get it out of your mind that you're going to make some idol. Get it out of your mind. Did they get it out of their mind? Moshe goes up second time. Well, I don't know what's going on with this Moshe guy. He's, you know, he goes on vacation. He, instead of taking a week, he's taking 2 weeks. Where's this guy at? Aaron. We don't know what to make of this Moshe. He forgot us. He's gone. He's dead. He died. Well, bring me your gold. They have no form. They saw no form. So they're going to take an image from their past. When you see no form about Yehovah and you want to make something, you always take something from your past. The stuff he delivered you from. So they went all the way back, rewind all the way back to Mitzrayim, and there stood their golden calf. It was very prominent in Mitzrayim. It represented strength, being strong. It represented the olive. And so Moshe and Aaron says, I put the gold in the fire and I'll pop this calf. Like nobody chiseled it out or nothing. Nobody hammered it out, really. It just come out on its own. But the people said, but don't worry about it. This calf is Yehovah. That was not the thing to say. Because if Yehovah to be that calf, you just lowered him down and you took away his glory and his esteem, and you lowered it down to a creature. The Creator is now a creature. You see how bad that is? And now you worship the creature rather than the Creator. Don't make me a creature when I'm the Creator. I made that creature. I'm not that creature. I don't want to be that creature. I don't need to be that creature. I'm the Creator. And Yehovah stated, as a matter of fact, don't do that. So he's reminded them of these things. Lest you should do corruptly and shall make for yourself a carved image and in the form of any figure, the likeness of a male or female, it doesn't matter. He covers everything here. Male or female, the likeness of any beast that is on the earth, or the likeness of any winged bird that flies in the heavens, or the likeness of any creature that creeps on the ground, or the likeness of any fish that is in the waters under the earth, lest you lift up your eyes to the heavens and see the sun and the moon and the stars and all the host of heaven, and you be drawn away into bowing down to them and serving them, which Yehovah Elohim has allotted to all people under the heavens. You can do whatever you want to do. You can do whatever you want to do here tonight, every one of you. You can decide tomorrow. Well, I think I'm just going to go with the sun. It's bright. It always comes up in the east. And so I'm just going to face the east. Remember he told Moshe, face the east? Because the east was where stuff, it would be dark, and all of a sudden, light would start coming. So he's facing the east. He's being reminded. It was taking Moshe down this memory lane. That's where I brought you from. This is how I'm going to keep you. And he just let him look at all these places and bringing back to his attention all these things. But he says, you can do whatever you want to do. You can make any kind of image you want. But it'll never be Yehovah. It'll never be the Creator, ever. You can all bow down and worship to it. It'll still never be him. And so we've had different religions come along, quote, under the Christian banner, Christian religions, and they start popping these images up. Some of the most famous images is the one of the crucifixion. Under these rules, is that allowed? The crucifixion, the crucifix, is that allowed under these rules? What about Mary, the statue of Mary holding baby Jesus? Is that allowed? None of that's allowed under these rules. So if that's a religion, Christian religion, that has all these things, obviously, they're not under this banner here. So what banner you're going to be under is going to be important. What about the little fish symbol you put on your car a little sticker, fish symbol. Is that allowed under these rules? You understand? He said, don't do it. For what? Well, it just means Christian. You don't have to have something that you have carved to mean Christian. Because you can have that and not be living up to it. You can have all these things because they do nothing for you at all. So I had a guy sitting in my truck. He's sitting in my truck. He was a guy that we had a service. The service ended. It started storming, raining during Katrina. And the guy's crying. I mean, he's crying. And he says, I just came with the group to help. I ain't no Christian. I said, that's okay, brother. I just know the Lord touched you. He said, he done more than touch me. I don't know what he's doing to me, but he's tearing me up right now. Somebody came, got me about midday, and he's on a levee, and he's giving it all to God. I mean, screaming. I know you're real. You brought me to this place. I know you're, and he's just hands up doing that. Well, I tried to do as much as I could long distance. Guy lives in Oregon, just to kind of stay in touch with him. I even went to his house. Let me tell you, that guy was so shocked when I knocked on his door, he could not believe it. But I told him I'd help him. I gave my word to him. And Charlotte said, babe, where are we going? I said, we're going to see Tim. We drove. That's a good drive. I knocked on that man's door. When he opened the door, he instantly started crying. He said, how in the world this guy, he kept saying, how this guy comes and see me? And how this guy come and see me? He said, God is real, isn't he? I said, he's real to me. He's real to me. He loves you. Well, he struggled. Well, anyway, he came down year before last. He said, I'm coming to see you. He said, I told you when you came see me, I'm going to come see you. And I never did. He said, I ain't very good at my words. He said, I'm coming to see you. So he came down. So he's sitting in my truck. And he said, I still got all this stuff on me. I got all this in my mind. He said, I don't know what to do. I said, well, where are you going to church? Well, I can't find a church like yours. I've been to all of them. He said, I went to one. I pull up with my granddaughter on the back of the motorcycle, and they said, they don't have motorcycle parking here. He says, so I told her to get back on, and we left. I mean, he's a biker kind of guy, you know. He's got tats on. I mean, he's just who he is. Anyway, he reaches in his shirt, and he pulls out this necklace, and he says, what you think about this emblem right here? And I said, well, you want to know what I think, or do you want to know what God thinks? Because I can give you what I think. It don't matter. Because it don't matter what I, just because a man can think don't make it right. I said, but I can tell you what God says. And I brought him to this section there. He yanked it off his neck like that. And he said, I don't want it no more. That's the kind of guy he is. He just, once he sees it, he's on it. But then he struggles later on. So I've been praying for him. God keep him somehow. So I talked to him a while back. And he said, you saw me on TV? I said, no. He said, I was with Trump over there at the White House. We broke in that bad boy. He said, I had one of them flags and I was waving like that. He said, the FBI come to my house and tried to arrest me. I said, Tim, you got to lay off of that stuff. He said, that was me. I was up there going, we taking our house back. He said, we taking our house back. I said, yeah, keep going. Anyway, I'd love to have him here. It would be nice. Because I'd work with him. Every day I'd work with him. I'd spend time with him. Some people it takes that. Some people, they get it and they can make it, but he's struggling. And he lives in a state that's, it's hard there. The riots were going on there, and I mean, he got kind of wrapped up in a lot of that stuff. So I've been praying for him, but he saw, and I brought him to this, and he instantly pulled it off. He said, I don't want it. because he was attaching his faith to something. I said, you don't need that. What you need is this inner touch from God that'll never go away. You can't forget it. There it is. It's inside of you. And so I was reminded of that when I was reading it again, that whole event that took right outside right here. It was parked. He stayed at the little building there, him and his grandson. And so keep praying for Tim. He's still alive. He's still trying to make it. I talked to him every night. He said, I'm trying to make it. I said, you keep pressing in. Because he never forgot that day in the rain. He said that was as real as anything's been to him in his whole life. He struggled. But twice I went out, saw him. And let me tell you, it just takes somebody. Pray for somebody. I've been praying for somebody. Somebody go and tell a guy that they love him and they're going to spend some time with him and speak into his life. They got to be somebody. I told him they got to be somebody. You got to keep looking. Keep looking. There's got to be somebody over there that God's dealing with. They're rising up and you can connect with them. You got to make a connection. And so that should be important to our life. But I was reminded of that because of this and that incident that happened. And what happens, we get ourselves tied into these things. They can't help us at all. But he says, verse 20 says, but Jehovah has taken you and brought you out of the iron furnace. Now, how many know the iron furnace is not good for none of us? That's why he brought us out of the iron furnace. Now, an iron furnace represents, you know what happens in an iron furnace? Cremation. You cremate people in the iron furnace. An iron furnace is what the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego was put in, an iron furnace. We don't want nothing to do with the iron furnace. He said, I took you out of the iron furnace. Meaning if I'd have left you there, you'd all be dead. You'd all burned up. You'd all been brought to ash. The only thing you get out of an iron furnace is ash. You never want to be in an iron furnace without the one who looks like the Son of Elohim with you. So what did Jehovah do? He said, I took you out of that. That's where you were. We ain't got you out of it. Just like the three Hebrew boys. He took them out. They were in there, but he took them out. He didn't leave them in the iron furnace. Took them out. So we don't want to think, well, I'm just going to go in the iron furnace and Jehovah's going to come and rescue me. I mean, they didn't volunteer to go in. They were thrown in because they wouldn't bow to the king's image. So you don't put yourself in the iron furnace. And so he says, but Jehovah has taken you and brought you out of the iron furnace, out of Mitzrayim, to be his people and inheritance as it is today. And Jehovah was enraged with me because of your words. Notice what he said. He was enraged with me because of your words. And swore that I would not pass over this Jordan, and that I would not enter the good land which Jehovah Elohim has given you as an inheritance. For I am to die in this land, and am not passing over the Jordan. He's still a little sour about this. And he's letting them know how he feels. It was your words that caused this to happen. Nonetheless, he's responsible for his own actions. That's all true. He's not saying lies here. It was their words that caused him to do what he did. But he's responsible for his own actions, just like every one of us. We go around saying, well, I wouldn't have done what I'd done if it wouldn't have been for him saying this or her doing that or she, him doing that. That's fine. You might be speaking 100% true, but you're responsible for your actions. Your actions is your responsibility. That's where we have to have more control, and we have to gain more control. And the way you gain control is you got to snuggle on in and get real tight and cling to him, because other than that, if you're out at hand's reach, Sometimes I'm convinced. You still connected with God? Yeah, but barely, we just got nails connected here. We had arm's length. That's not somebody that's trying to get to that 60 and 100. They tinkering on not even getting 30. You got to snuggle on in. Cling to him. And Yehovah was enraged with me because of your words and swore that I would not pass over this Jordan and that I would not enter the good land which Yehovah Elohim has given you as an inheritance. For I am to die in this land. I am not to pass over the Jordan, but you are passing over and shall possess the good land. Guard yourself. Guard yourself. He constantly reminds us, guard yourself, lest you forget the covenant of Yehovah. So is it possible to forget the covenant of Yehovah? Absolutely. People get sidetracked and just forget the covenant. You can't forget this covenant. Remember, you said, I do. You don't forget that covenant. And let me tell you, don't take long. All it takes is a little bit of slack, and the enemy's going to jump on it just like that. That's what he does. He's good at what he does. But let me tell you, God's better at what he does. If we'll go with him, he's better. You never, ever, 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 ever put Satan and God on some even plane. There's no closeness there. There's no closeness there. So you want to access all that God is. Don't try to lower him down to some plane that he's got this equal fight with Satan. You show me what equal fight there was when Yeshua in Luke 4. In Luke 4, we don't have time to read it tonight, but Luke 4, show me where there's equal playing field there when it comes to the power that Yeshua had after fasting 40 days and the temptation of Satan. There was nothing equal there. There was not, he almost accidentally gave in. You don't see that. There's no language there that tells us that. He didn't almost slip off the pinnacle of the temple and fall. Don't worry about the angels. He gave his angels charge. Even using scripture, he used scripture against Yeshua. There was no, I almost slipped. There was none of that. What did Yeshua use? All three times, what book did he quote from? Devarim. All three times, he quoted from Devarim. And so, I don't think I have to say it again. Yeshua was a Torah teacher. How did he have victory over Satan? Because he knew the Torah. That's how he had victory. He knew. He knew it. He could quote it. And he showed it. He proved it there in Luke 4. He quoted Devarim every time. And so we see these wonderful principles laid out for us in this fourth chapter. That's absolutely incredible. I was reading over this again today. And I was, you know, like I said, I start after Midrash, I go home. I always look that evening. I always look at the next Torah portion so I get my mind right. So I start looking at it then. And so you start looking at it and you start thinking, man, there's so much stuff I want to say. There's so many messages. Because I always look for a message that I can use, a scripture that'll give me an angle to preach a message. Well, if I get 100 messages, then I got 100 messages on my mind. I know I can't preach but one tonight. So then I got to kind of deglaze myself from that sticking in my mind and say, okay, I got to teach the Torah here. And so sometimes I struggle with it. But every one of these things are little messages that you could teach on. And there's so many verses you can go to that they're connected to. So sometimes you struggle with that. You're going through the Torah and a message pops up and you go on the message trail and you forgot you got to teach the Torah. I know y'all don't struggle with that. I watch you do it every service. So he says, for I'm to die in this land. I am not passing over the Jordan, but you are passing over and shall possess the good land. Guard yourself, lest you forget the covenant of Yehovah Elohim, which he made with you, and shall make for yourselves a carved image in any form as Yehovah Elohim has commanded you. Don't do it. Don't make a carved image. So there goes the new CD. Not too bad. So anyway, we'll start here in the morning because I got to get to 6:00.